some of the toughest flying in the world. I'm Pete Combs, and this is Aero News. It's Friday, June 2nd, 2006. You know, we're lucky in a lot of ways to have senior correspondent Kevin O'Brien on board, but perhaps most lucky in the sense that Hognose is one of those guys who's been there and done that. As a special forces operative, Kevin was stationed in Afghanistan, and he knows firsthand about some of the toughest flying conditions in the entire world. And some of that flying was done by British combat helicopters in action last week. Kevin joins me now from near Boston, Massachusetts. Kevin, an action involving both French and British forces.
Well, what really happened is in the western part of Afghanistan, the United States has handed over to NATO forces. And the NATO forces have been doing the reconstruction under the provincial reconstruction teams, but they've also been handling the combat operations. And this year there have been quite a bit of combat operations as the Taliban swing into their traditional spring offensive, what's becoming their traditional spring offensive. And so a French special operations team was conducting a reconnaissance operation when they were ambushed by a large number of Taliban insurgents. They got into quite a good fight, and they got on the radio and called for help. And when the help showed up, it was Apache helicopters operated by the British Army.
But not just any Apache helicopters, rather unblooded Apache helicopters.
Well, yes, this was the first combat that I know of. It was certainly the first Hellfire firing in action by the British Army.
So, now just to give everybody a background with regard to the British version of the Apache helicopter, it looks like a U.S. Apache helicopter. It smells like a U.S. Apache helicopter. It may even fly somewhat like a U.S. Apache helicopter, but it is, for all of that, not a U.S.-made Apache helicopter.
No, they're made under license by Augusta Westwind in Britain. They incorporate British Rolls-Royce engines that have pretty much the same power as the GE engines that are used in American helicopters. There have been 9 countries so far, counting the U.S. and Britain, that bought this helicopter, and most of them have opted for the GE engines, but some of them have chosen the Rolls-Royce. You know, you can get it any way you want. They're glad to sell it to you. Boeing is glad to sell it to you any way you like.
Yeah, at the Alice's Restaurant of helicopter warfare. Well, all right, so we have a British version of the Apache, a fairly untried version of the Apache at that, at least as far as the Brits are concerned.
They've been training very hard, Pete, and they trained up specifically for this mission. They were expecting that they'd probably see some action, and now they have. But the missile that they fired wound up being fired at a French vehicle to prevent the vehicle from being captured. So, of course, there's been a lot of, reenacting the Battle of Trafalgar jokes.
Well, yeah, absolutely. And, on top of all that, it was a friendly French vehicle, although, as you said, it was somewhat in trouble there in this encounter. What more happened in this encounter?
Well, a force of well over 100 Taliban engaged a small French reconnaissance team, and well over 100 Taliban wound up dying by the time the day was over. Some of them probably did get away, but the British killed an awful lot of them with gunfire from the Apaches, and the French were holding up their end of the fight, too. Unfortunately, the French did lose 2 of their commandos from their elite Special Operations Force, and the Afghan forces that were with the French did suffer a number of dead and wounded as well.
Well, all levity aside at this point, because as you said, there were 2 French fatalities, the NATO forces, how do they stack up to the American forces they largely replaced in Afghanistan? And if you would, please pay special attention to the air element.
Well, actually, it's very much an air-assisted war. And the NATO forces generally don't have as much of an ability to deliver precision-guided munitions that the U.S. Air Force and the U.S. Naval Air Forces have. But the British are close to our equals in that. They have Harriers in Afghanistan that they were going to bring home, and they've been so useful there they decided to leave them for a while. The helicopters, of course, the British helicopter gunship is an exact match for ours. The big problem in Afghanistan in the air war there is that the terrain is very rugged, the distances are great. You're talking about high altitudes, 7,000 feet and up, and there's almost no limit to the up. You've got 22,000-foot mountains in Afghanistan. And so your density altitude concerns are really big, and you'll often find something like an Apache relatively lightly loaded compared to how it might operate back in the British Isles where it's at sea level.
There have been a lot of fixed-wing and helo accidents in Afghanistan. Would you say that the dust and the altitude combined would be the biggest factor in some of these non-combat mishaps?
Well, there's a lot of things. There's the altitude. There's the mountain conditions. It's very, very mountainous. You know, Britons go over there, and they haven't got the experience of flying in the mountains that perhaps some of the French guys have or that the Americans that have been out in the Rocky Mountains have had. I got medevaced in a helicopter that was flown by a California guard crew that had experience in the mountains, and they were very good. When I went back into the field, I flew with an air crew from Fort Bragg who were very good, but I didn't think they had enough respect for the mountains, and they scared the daylights out of me.
Well, and that is the big thing there, respect for terrain, because in six of the eight accidents that I'm thinking about right now, controlled flight into terrain was what happened.
Well, there have been. There was a crew coming to my camp, actually, to pick up two injured Afghan kids, two really ill kids that we had in our little clinic. And that air crew broke off from the tanker and flew their helicopter right into a mountainside. That kind of thing can happen. Your situational awareness is absolutely critical. The weather also is a factor because the clouds can be on you in no time at all. And you've got mountains high enough that, you know, with a heavily loaded helicopter or even some fixed-wing aircraft, you're flying in the canyons. You're not really very able to climb over the mountains. There was an aircrew for Blackwater Aviation that flew into a box canyon. Very experienced crew. The pilot was an experienced Alaskan bush pilot, and they still made this, you know, unfortunately fatal error. So it's the terrain is dangerous. There's relatively few nav aids. The danger is not so much the enemy shooting at you, although that has taken down aircraft. The danger is really the austere conditions and the very, very rugged terrain and the harsh weather.
We'll hear more from Kevin O'Brien on aerial warfare in Afghanistan coming up in just a moment. But first, this Aerocast is brought to you by Aircraft Engine Services, makers of the all-aluminum V220 and V300T engines.
How up-to-date is your aircraft engine? Automotive engineering has advanced so much over the past 30 years that you almost never have to raise the hood. Why can't an airplane engine be just as simple and just as reliable? Now it can. Check out the new V220 and V300T from Aircraft Engine Services. The all-aluminum construction of the V220 and V300T gives these engines the best power-to-weight ratio in their class. Earlier aluminum block engines suffered from excessive wear unless they were protected with heavy steel cylinder liners. In the V220 and V300T, each cylinder bore is surface-coated with Nicosil, an electro-deposited nickel coating containing hard silicone carbide particles. The benefits of a better power-to-weight ratio include increased range and higher useful loads, with less of a trade-off between fuel capacity and passenger or cargo carrying capacity. The AES V220 and V300T, as simple as a car's engine, but oh so much more fun to drive. Check us out on the web at theaircraftengine.com or call us at 321-268-3718. Aircraft Engine Services, the shape of things to come. Air Journey for Pilots by Pilots shares with you 8 years of travel adventure from the Bahamas, the Caribbean, and Central America to Europe and South America. Did you know that you can air journey your plane to your destination? Air Journey's 24/7 concierge service will help you design and fly your own flying journey adventure. From navigation log to authorization paperwork, charts, flight plan, hotel reservations, transfers, sightseeing, and special guides, Air Journey has it all for you. Call for Air Journey's expertise and feel the adventure. 888-554-3774 or visit airjourney.com. At Cirrus Design, we don't ignore the fundamentals of aviation design. We just give them an ingenious new interpretation. The Cirrus SRV G2. Think flying is a bit too complicated for you to learn or a little too expensive for your lifestyle? Think again. The SRV G2 offers the exceptional design and performance equated with owning a Cirrus, yet at a price that can make your dreams of flying a new reality. To learn more, call 888-750-9927 or check us out on the web at cirrusdesign.com.
Welcome back to our AeroCast. I'm Pete Combs talking with ANN Senior Correspondent Kevin O'Brien. Kevin is talking about aerial warfare in that mountainous country. Certainly no easy proposition. We've talked about a French encounter which required air support from British Apache helicopters. And we've also talked in general about the flying conditions in Afghanistan, which are extremely rough. Kevin, if I could go back, let's say 15, 20 years to the Soviet occupation of Afghanistan. The Soviets had hoped in large that they could fight this war from the air. How did they fare?
The Soviets didn't do very well, and part of it was, of course, their strategy went through a number of evolutions, and finally they reached the point where they just gave up on the winning hearts and minds thing, and they just began to level villages from the air. A team in my unit actually came on one of these villages that apparently was destroyed in the mid-1980s when they later found out, you know, the locals from the next village 100 miles up the road said, oh yeah, that place in the desert, that's a bad place. The Russians bombed that place and nobody goes there. So the Russians took some strange approaches to warfare that really didn't help them win the war. They did use helicopters a lot. They had a lot of helicopter assaults. They used an equivalent to our A-10, the Su-25, and that sort of thing, you know, close support, they were very dependent on it. But they didn't have some of the technology we have with the very precision-guided weapons. And they certainly, you know, it's a critical thing to say about another fighting man, but they really didn't have an attitude towards trying to spare the life of the non-combatants at all. They kind of figured it. Afghans were all enemies, and the sooner they were all dead, the sooner they could all go home.
Kevin, as hard as it is to fly in Afghanistan, given the terrains and the density altitude, really that entire operation hinges upon air power.
That does, and again, it comes back to the distances. And also, there's really, the roads are just unbelievably bad. I'm sure they've been improved since my tour in 2002, 2003. But you almost cannot overstate how bad the roads are. The roads are like going on the Baja 500. They're worse than the Paris-Dakar rally, if you've ever seen that on TV. And yet, you know, the Afghans have these guys that drive trucks, and they'll drive, you know, everything is delivered in the country by truck. There's no railroads. It's too mountainous for railroads. And everything got around either by truck or by aircraft. And so each of the major cities has got a little one-runway airport that was built either by the Russians or by the United States back in the 1950s. And that's pretty much how the U.S. forces get around, is flying from airstrip to airstrip.
Have American forces and NATO forces behind them had to adapt their flying techniques to that country?
Oh, absolutely. Talking to the air crews, they've learned so much, and some of it's been, you mentioned the dust before. Certainly it's a very arid country. When I was there, it had 7 years of unusual drought, even for Afghanistan, which is, you know, just unbelievably dusty. And the problem is, of course, you come in to land in a helicopter, and you've stirred up all this dust, and you create a brownout condition, where all of a sudden you're a couple feet off the deck, and you're ineffective IMC. And so they make as many as possible roll-on landings to the extent they can. You know, someplace you don't have the terrain to do it. I saw a helicopter at Kandahar, a Chinook, that had been making a roll-on landing and found a ditch. And the aircraft was very badly damaged. It was in the process of being crated up to go back to Philadelphia for rebuild.
That's fairly ugly.
Oh, yeah. It's a very, very rough place to fly. The air crews are doing incredible work. An awful lot of coverage and resolutions being displayed there every day, and not just, of course, by the Americans, but also the Canadians have been there. The British are there now. The Italians are there. They had a terrible situation a few months ago where they crashed two helicopters on the same night. And again, it was simply the bad mountain conditions and the weather to get to you there.
So respect for the mountains, obviously something that you want to see in any pilot that you would fly with. Tell me a little bit more in terms of the techniques that you have to use. Is there any particular aircraft that is better suited than most for flight in Afghanistan?
Well, you need a lot of power. So one of the things that they quickly found is some of the older helicopters, there's almost no point in even bringing them because they haven't got the oomph to lift weight at that density altitude. Now, the Black Hawk can lift 22,000 pounds at sea level. So that's a good airlifter. And, of course, the Chinook has been absolutely indispensable.
Kevin, if you were to go back, you would take a Black Hawk, a Chinook. What would you go back to fly in?
Well, given the professionalism of the air crews, I was totally comfortable with everybody. But the California National Guard crew that medevaced me, flying that Q model Black Hawk, which is a special medevac version, and they actually took me out through a terrain feature called the Modern Notch, which if you can imagine what a notch is like in the mountains in Afghanistan.
Oh, boy, yeah.
And as night was falling, and they did it with FLIR, and I was sitting up in the back of the helicopter, and I was not seriously injured, but the doctor insisted I go back to the hospital anyhow. So away I was going, and my first thought was, geez, I'm going to get killed riding a helicopter back to the base. That's going to be so ironic.
Yep.
And then the next thing I realized is, wow, these guys are really stone pros. They're really good. And I spent the rest of the flight back just admiring the professionalism of that air crew. And again, they were, you know, California weekend warriors. But then when I talked to them, it turned out what they did for a day job was they flew life flight in the mountains of California. So this is kind of a busman's holiday for them.
Kevin O'Brien is our senior correspondent. He's been speaking about Afghanistan and the rigors of flying therein. Kevin, glad you're back safe, of course, although you've been back for a while. And we sure appreciate your time tonight.
Well, thank you, Pete. Good day.
You've been listening to a special feature from Aero News. On the web, you'll find us at aero-news.net. For Kevin O'Brien, I'm Pete Combs. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you at the airport.